As we continue our UFO extravaganza, next up, Paula Harris with us in her book, Conversations with Colonel Corso. Now, those of you who have listened to this program for years, you know the name Colonel Philip Corso. If you're brand new, we'll have Paula talk about it. It is an amazing story. Paula's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Paula Harris with us. Paula, of course, is an Italian-American photojournalist, investigative reporter in the field of extraterrestrial-related phenomena research. She has studied extraterrestrial-related phenomena since 1979, and she, of course, is an expert on this. And she was so gifted to be able to have worked with the late John Mack and Bud Hopkins and so many others. And she is still out there in the forefront bringing us incredible information. She produces the StarWorks USA Laughlin Conference every year in Laughlin, Nevada. It's called Time for Truth this year. It's going to be in November. I'll be out there. I'm there most of the time, but looking forward to this. And Paula, your work is still phenomenal. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, George. It's really good to be back. Yes, I'm still working. That's part of the mission. I mean, that's part of what I do. But it's so interesting, and I know you find it very interesting.
Oh, my gosh. It gets in our blood. We can't stop, can we?
No, we can't, because we all want to know. I think you ask me always what drives me. Well, you know, I want to know. And the thing is that I want to really highlight for your listeners that my work is that I go to the source. I go all around the world and talk to the actual source, the people that know. All my interviews are either ex-military intelligence people, or I'm very close to the former Defense Minister of Canada, Clifford Stone, crash retrieval, and of course Colonel Philip Corso.
Oh, the Corso story. Let's talk about him. We'll get into Dr. J. Allen Hynek and so many other things. I just had Stanton Friedman on, Paula, right before you for a couple hours. Still going strong. Had a little heart attack a few years ago, but God love him. He's still ticking along.
Well, we owe a lot to Stanton Friedman. I mean, he's the one that brought forth the whole Jesse Marcel, the Roswell story, the MJ-12 connection. And it's people like that that will leave a legacy in the field.
Paula, let's get into Philip Corso. He wrote the book with our friend Bill Burns the day after Roswell, telling Bill some incredible things about what happened many, many years ago. But give us the overview of Philip Corso.
Well, really, the book came out at the 50th anniversary of Roswell in 1997. I was working in Italy, and I was sent there to cover the story.
That was the year of the Phoenix Lights, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually 97 was the 50th anniversary. I want to remind everybody that this is the 70th.
Unbelievable.
So that's why I waited 20 years. I mean, I wasn't ready to do it. But actually, the day after Roswell was the book that really turned the corner for me as a researcher, because as a researcher, I couldn't understand why the secrecy, why it was kept secret. I thought maybe because of religion, the Vatican, or maybe it was because everybody was afraid of the ETs. And then I realized when I talked to Colonel Corso and spent so much time with him that the real reason the secrecy is the way it is because of the technology. Because Colonel Corso, for the Army, was in charge of the Foreign Technology Desk, and Colonel Corso told me that in 1960 and 63, he was given the artifacts, some of the artifacts that came from the Roswell crash. And George, I have to say that some of them had to go to the Air Force because the Army and the Air Force were one in 1947. So
right.
Those people that are his detractors that say, oh, the fiber optics and all that was in the general public. Well, of course they were, because if you're going to have crashes in 1947, then the Air Force is going to have some of that stuff too, and they're not going to throw it in the trash.
Exactly. So let's talk more about Corso and his assignment with the crash retrieval. And then he farmed it out to industry, did he not?
Yes, he did. And what he told me, first of all, I want to make it clear, the reason why he wrote the book was for his three grandsons, Nick, and Andrew and Philip. And he said, "My boys, my grandsons wanted to know if I ever met ET." And he said, "I had to tell the truth because I thought the young people of the world could handle it." And the deal was made between him and General Trudeau that whoever remained, whoever was left, alive, the last one would reveal the truth about the foreign technology, which is a bombshell. And what his job was in particular, and in my book, I go into detail because everything I did with Colonel Corso in Italy when we brought him over there in 1997 and 1998, I recorded on audio tape. So I have his voice. I have the audio tape of his telling me how he would go into major industry, which, people would call a military industrial complex today, and with cash, and see what they had worked on. And he added one thing that he brought his German scientists with him, and he names them. And he said
Jeez.
he worked with Hermann Oberst, and he said he worked with Saarbrücker. So the German scientists were also involved in this back engineering. He said when he'd go to these industries, he'd have an envelope of money and he'd have to check it out. And people were, the heads of these CEOs were really nervous when he'd come because he'd bring his scientists with him, or he'd go alone and he'd see what they had done, and if he was satisfied, he'd pay them. And he said the job was this: he had to give it first to the army. And he said, unfortunately, the articles that what he had was made for weapons of war to enhance the competitive edge of the army, because I think all those different branches compete for contracts, as we know. And he said, then he said he asked that it go into the general public. So the night screening devices, we have them now. We have a lot of things, the high tenacity fibers. And he said that then it would go into, the general public.
To give credit, of course, to our friend Bill Burns, who did a great job in the book The Day After Roswell, taking Corso's words, Paula, and putting them into print. Not an easy task. He did a good job.
Yeah, not an easy test because they were handwritten. So the problem is, and I have a couple of those pages in my book, because what he handed us in Italy was all handwritten, and I don't know how Bill did it. But the thing is, there are some inaccuracies, and his detractors went after him in the United States, and that was a big shame because when it came to Europe, he was very well appreciated. And he gave us the original notes, which we are reprinting this year, called The Dawn of a New Age. And it's also on the Open Minds TV, internet website, because it was given to them. So his original notes are his original notes, and there's no qualms about that. People can go and download those. Now, we have them in Italy. We had them in 1998, and we printed them so that anybody that went after the book, we could say, well, we have the original notes. This is what he actually said. And so it was a turning point in ufology, George, because we didn't have any proof, or we didn't know for sure what was happening here. And of course, the secrecy is that whatever technologies are hidden, whatever they had that they didn't throw away, including the craft, they're not running on gas and oil. It would be the downfall of an entire economy on this planet.
Paula, with the work that Corso did he have anything to gain if he lied?
Absolutely not. When you're absolutely not. But he wasn't very happy at the end of his life because of a lot of the controversy around the book and the criticism, towards him. And I remember the Thursday before he died, he said to me, "I am sorry I ever wrote the book. The people that are coming after me did not have the high clearances I did." And his background, and I've got his documents in the book, was that he was the head of intelligence in Rome when he was 28 years old. I mean, he was the head of the Counterintelligence Corps, the CIC. And because I had him in Rome and because he came to Rome, I was able to walk him down the streets, have him show me where he lodged, have him show me where the offices were, have him tell me the stories of how he went after everybody. And actually, he even went and admonished Pope Paul, because Pope Paul, the Montini Pope, was letting the Nazis get away and go to South America. So, I mean, Colonel Corso is a piece of history. He told me all the things he did, and of course, we checked his background in Italy. It was easy. And everything he said was true. Every single thing that he did, everything that he said. And you probably know, if you've spoken to Bill Burns, that there are three books: The Day After Dallas,
mm-hmm.
The Man Who Saved Rome, and The Day After Roswell. So he was also connected with the Warren Commission.
Yes.
Corso was a very respected man.
Well, he sure was. And let's tie this in. Did Dr. J. Allen Hynek know Corso at all?
No, because Allen Hynek was like in the 1980s, and Corso came out in 1997. And Allen never touched the subject of back engineering. He never touched Dr. Hynek was interested in number one sightings and number one physical traces cases, because then you have proof. You can, you know, because close encounters of the second kind are where you take the soil and you can examine something. And number three, Dr. Hynek was interested in contact and implants and that kind of thing. So our conversations together for the 6 years I knew him were in that arena. He never touched what happened to the crash saucers. And I'm going to add something. Roswell was not the only crash. So we have all of these things happening in 47. Of course, I did the 1945 San Antonio case.
How about Cape Girardeau, Missouri? Remember that one?
And Cape Girardeau. And for the people who want to study this, I mean, Ryan Wood has an incredible book called Magic Eyes Only, and it has 93 crashes from all over the world. So there was not just Roswell. Roswell is like the paradigm for ufology, but there were other crashes. So what you have is these retrievals, and you're not going to, I keep saying this, you're not going to throw it in the trash. You're going to try to figure out what it is and if it works.
Well, we sure are.
I'm going to add one other thing, George. In the book, Colonel Corso told me that he had seen the autopsies of the bodies. He had seen Kraft at Wright-Patterson, and he insisted that the extraterrestrial biological entity, which he kept calling it a clone, an EB, was part of the craft and helped fly the craft.
Why is he so controversial?
Well, because there are a few errors in the book, and the problem with the errors in the book is, you know, I've talked to a lot of whistleblowers, and I was very close to Dr. Michael Wolf Cruvant because I did his case too, and what he used to tell me, even with the Charles Hall case and so forth, that there are these discrepancies give you a chance to cancel the whole thing, to call it a hoax, and this is called something called plausible deniability. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but plausible deniability sometimes is the only way you can get out information, which means there's a tiny bit of disinformation in there so that they can cancel. Whoever the debunkers or the detractors or the skeptics are, they can take that and they can just run with it. And unfortunately, that was done with this book and other books. Plausible deniability is what sometimes the whistleblowers need in order to be able to print a book. Sometimes they do it under science fiction. The real story comes out as a science fiction book, but it's real. I mean, it's the way they can get it out to the general public. And my question to the skeptics and so forth is, did you sit down with him and have long conversations the way we did, the way Colin Andrews did? You know, Colin Andrews, for me, is a real hero. He's one of the people I admire most in the field.
Expert in crop formations, right?
Yeah, he wrote a recommendation on the book. He said that he had And actually, I was there in San Marino in 1998 when Colin Andrews, oh, so many people were, Colin, all the big top researchers were there, Michael Lindemann, and Colin Andrews, and Yvonne Smith was there, and Michael Hesman, and they all signed a resolution in the Independence Republic of San Marino to bring the UFO question to the United Nations, just like they did it for Grenada, you know, in 19, mm-hmm. I think it was 79. So in 98, they tried, a little independent republic that has nothing to lose, did it with Colonel Corso's signature, and Colin Andrews writes in my book that he sat down and did talk to Colonel Corso for hours and was convinced the man was sincere and knew what he was talking about.
Did Corso ever tell you what he thought was really happening in the field of ufology? What was going on? Why we were being visited?
Well, in my book, you'll find out that Colonel Corso had contact. Because when I met Corso, first of all, when I got to Roswell in 1997, this is one of those synchronicities. I didn't have a place to stay. I didn't even know what he looked like. I was supposed to cover the story. I didn't even want to go. I get to Roswell. I go to the press station. I say, where can I sleep? I can't do a story from 40 miles away. And they said, open up the phone book. And they said to me, and look for a hotel. Good luck. It's been booked. This is a big party. It's been booked since February. And I opened the phone book, the first hotel was the Sallyport Inn, and that's where everybody was staying, and there was one room for three nights, which is what I needed, and the room was right next door to Colonel Corso. So if that isn't a coincidence, I don't know what is. My destiny was, like, set, and from that point on, when he was next door, he came over to my room the next day because I asked for an interview. It was very hard to get an interview with him then because Simon & Schuster kind of had him sequestered. And he came in and he gave me an interview about contact. And this is one of the most shameful things I'll admit to you, George. I'll talk to you about how it happened. But I, as a journalist, I thought that it would ruin his credibility, so I never printed it.
Wow.
I said, I don't want this interview. I said, you know, Colonel, it's very interesting, but I want to know about the back engineering. Don't give me this. And this is one of the problems that I've had to go with. I've had to change my mind. I've had to grow, and I've had to, you know, I've had to listen to people. And he came to my room and with two books, one for one of his World War II buddies, and one for my boss Maurizio. And what he said to me was, Paula, he said, when I was head of a missile base in White Sands, he said, in Red Canyon, he said, in 1957, I flew over and saw a craft on the ground. He said, when I landed by myself, I took a Jeep, went out into the desert. The craft was appearing and disappearing. He said, I couldn't understand. So he said he threw some cactus under it, and it squashed the cactus. Go ahead. Were you going to ask me?
No. I'm just reacting
to
what you're
saying.
He said,
from the left-hand side of a gold mine, this being walked out that had a helmet, and he said the being had a silver band with a red stone in the middle.
Hold on, Paula. We'll talk more about that when we come back on Coast to Coast. And our special guest tonight, Paula Harris, as we're talking about her latest work called Conversations with Colonel Corso, an incredible story of the late Philip Corso in his work in the UFO field, because he was assigned crashed material and has an incredible story, truly remarkable. Welcome back. Paula Harris with us. Her book, of course, Conversations with Colonel Corso. What did you think of Philip Corso, Paula, as a person?
Well, first of all, when he walked in and when I saw him, I knew from things that he had said to me that he was telling the truth because I pieced it together. And when I did see him for the first time, I asked him about the Santilli footage. I don't know, the famous alien autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And the alien autopsy footage, you know, in Italy was a big deal. I mean, we had it on all major stations. And he said, what he said to me was, you know, it seemed real because he said one of the artifacts I had was a black lens. He said that we used to walk up and down the halls of the Pentagon and we could see the furniture. He said that was in the nut file. And he said from that we made night screening devices. So if you see the alien, the Santilli footage, what you see is they're peeling off this lens from the being and he has a pupil underneath. So, of course, it was a light collector. I mean, it makes sense. Somebody who comes here, he said he had one of those and that's what they used for the night screening. You know, as a person, we brought his grandchildren every time he came twice to Europe. And he was not only a wonderful and devoted grandfather, he was not about to tell stories when he wanted to leave a legacy. That's why I said that. And George, the story I was telling before is one of the biggest mistakes of my life because in 1997, I was very nuts and bolts. I've changed since then.
What happened?
And when he was when he told me about the contact he had in Red Canyon when he was head of the missile battalion there, and by the way, I have all his records in the book, so you can see he was the head of a nuclear missile battalion.
Oh yeah, he was who he said he was.
Yes, he was. He was, and he said that when the being came out of the gold mine. This is Colonel Corso for you, because he was typical Sicilian. He took out his gun. He always carried also a stiletto knife in his boot. He said he pointed it at the being, and he said, friend or foe. And then he turned around to me, and he said, and he had a napkin. He said, guess what he said? And I said, he said, neither. And that I learned a lot from that, neither friend nor foe. The being said, shut down your radars because I can't get away or I can't leave. And Colonel Corso told me that at that time they were ordered to shut their radars down because it did cause problems. And he had left them on. And so the being said, do you want to come aboard? And Colonel Corso, you know, wrote on a napkin, guess what the being told me? And I said, what? And he said, a new world if you could take it. That's what he had to offer him. A new world if he could take it. Because Colonel Corso said, I'll let, you know, I could shut the radars down. I'm the only man that could do that for you, but what do you have to offer me? That phrase has been used in ufology. It comes from that contact experience. We've used it so often, and the truth is that Corso did call, and he even talks about what the name of the soldier was that he told to shut the radar down. He said the being took off. So you asked me what he thought the beings were doing here, and
right.
Basically he believed that the beings were keeping an eye on the whole Trinity White Sands area for the nuclear research we were doing, whether it was nuclear missiles, and as you know, there was a nuclear missile shutdown at Maelstrom in 1969. So the whole nuclear is the secret to the visitations. You know, everybody I talk to, whether it's Jean-Charles Dubarc, the pilot over Air France that had the Air France airplane where he saw the big, huge UFO over Paris, was over a nuclear installation. Stephenville has a nuclear plant. I mean, if people want to connect dots, about why the visitations, and that's a very important question. Look at the timing and where it happens.
And when Corso was given the information to distribute to companies, how many years did they jumpstart us because of that kind of technology?
Well, that's going to be hard to answer because if the Air Force already started that, like the, you know, the microchip and the transistor.
Right. And the lasers optics, and lasers and everything else.
And lasers. I mean, suppose the Air Force started it because they'd have contracts too, but they just don't have a Corso to talk about it. Corso got it as late. I think it's late in 1960. He talked about it was during the Kennedy administration. He had this. And You know, just to support his claims, I'm going to say that when I interviewed the former defense minister of Canada, I asked him, Paul Hellyer, why'd you get involved in this? And he said, I read Colonel Corso's book, he said, and my son called a four-star general, and he said, I talked to him, and he said that everything in Corso's book was true and more. And so that is why Paul Hellyer even bothered to get involved in the UFO phenomenon after reading The Day After Roswell. So it affected so many people because, as I said before, it gave you the idea of why the secret is being kept.
In terms of contact, did Corso ever say that there was anything nefarious involved, like David Jacobs has been reporting, Paula, over all these years, that there was something evil or bad here?
No. I mean, the being that he met could have destroyed every, you know, the beings can destroy anything. They can do anything they want. I mean, I really believe that the even disclosures in the hands of the ETs. No, he didn't. But he did say, and I have a videotape of him saying, it was my duty as a military man to prepare for an invasion if they were hostile, if they were. So we were preparing.
There's nothing we could have done. What could we have done, Paula, if they were hostile?
Well, it's really funny because he said it would be like shooting cannons, at an advanced civilization. He said it would be useless.
And he's right.
Shooting cannons in an advanced civilization.
Single ball cannons, you know.
Yeah, I can see that vision. Can't you? Just, you know, shooting cannons at these, you know, very, very, very highly technological.
With their force fields up.
Yeah. So, but he said at the end of his life, you know, he changed his mind like all intelligent people should change their mind every now and then. He basically said that when he was in the military, he had to do what he had to do. He was in the Korean War. He was in World War II, and he had a military mind. He said, but towards the end of his life, even in the book, he kind of talks from an ET point of view and says, you know, to the peoples of Earth, you want to destroy yourselves. You know, you have a couple of choices. We're watching you. If you want to really destroy yourselves, you want to do that. So I think that he had admiration for the ETs, and of course he had contact. I mean, which is so amazing. This new world that this being talked about, Matt, changing our also worldview about science and technology, and about, as you know, the paranormal is involved with all this, looking at. Dimensional phenomenon, looking at all the wild and wonderful new science that's going to come out after us. He was really into that.
Did the late Dr. John Mack ever have a chance to have met Corso, or if he did he talk about him at all?
No, John Mack didn't talk about Corso, but he did talk about contact. As you might have guessed, I wanted to stay away from contact.
You still there?
Hello.
There you are.
With Starworks USA.
Whoa, that's weird. That's weird. We've lost Paula, folks. So we're going to get her back and hopefully get rolling on the show again. Okay, I'm now convinced. I am now convinced after seeing what happened to Stanton Friedman and now Paula Harris. That the gremlins are out to get us. Let's try one more time to see if Paula's there. Paula, are you still there? Okay, she's not there at all. So we will call back and get her on and try to get rolling with this program again here on Coast to Coast. Paula Harris, of course, our special guest. Her latest book is called Conversations with Colonel Corso. And let me tell you, the situation with Corso is remarkable. I remember back in the St. Louis days when I was doing my Nighthawk show that when Bill Burns wrote the book The Day After Roswell and I had him on the local show, I was just obsessed with that story. And first of all, one, Bill Burns is a very truthful, believable guy. He has written a couple books with me, as a matter of fact, so I know how he works, and he's a detail-oriented person. But when I interviewed him, we got all kinds of incredible information about Philip Corso. I mean, he was just one of a kind. And you know, it's just one of those things. Paula, you back with us?
Yeah, I'm back on my cell. There's been a little interruption in the
Yeah, and
line,
we will because
but
you sound very muddy, so at the top of the hour, let's try to see if we get you back on that landline, okay?
it's okay. We can try.
What do you think's
We
going
can
on there?
try.
Are the gremlins out to get you?
I think the gremlins could be out. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah. Yeah, this has happened before, but
Well,
anyway,
let me tell
I
you,
belong.
your answering machine voice came on, of all things.
Yeah, it somebody tampered with it, but it's okay. This has happened to me with another radio show,
Well, this
with
just
another
happened to me
radio
with
show.
Stanton Friedman. He was on and got clipped off just right before you.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, you're not saying anything too controversial. I
Well, it
mean,
depends who you are. I mean, it depends on what the. I think we're very credible researchers, and you know, what can I say? But anyway, let me answer your question about John Mack, which is really cool.
yes.
You know, because our John Mack told me in around 2004. I think that's you know just before he died. He said that he thought people were being directly downloaded. He didn't, you know, that they the abduction scenario had really fallen off, and people were being directly downloaded, which means inspired, which they were being given messages, and you know, I've been studying this thing about how many messages people get, whether they be musicians like Grant Cameron talks about, or scientists, or so forth. And you don't need to be taken to get messages or to have contact. And I wish people would use that word contact more. You can have it if you have a direct line or if some you know you're in contact with some beings that would like to change the paradigm. And I think the earthly paradigm needs to be changed. So I think that there is help from above, and I really believe that in some way, shape, or form, that somebody up there, and there's, according to Corso, there were 52 different races categorized in the Pentagon, 52. So we can't just shove it into reptilian, gray, and you know, Nordic. 52 different kinds of peoples or cultures that they may be contacting us to change the paradigm, and that's where I'm going with the Laughlin Conference.
Yeah, I want to talk about that conference in a second, Paula. Do you know Betsy Lewis by any means? Any chance?
No, I don't.
Okay, she wrote a book on reptilian aliens. Her theory is, and listen to this one, and she doesn't negate the fact that there could be extraterrestrials, but her theory is that reptilian aliens are earthbound, that they were prehistoric dinosaurs 65 million years ago that stood upright. That did not die off during the asteroid strike because they probably lived underground. And over the 65 million years, they evolved to where their brain power and everything else has exceeded us. They walk upright, but they look like the reptilian aliens that we all talk about. And she's convinced that's what they are, dinosaurs that have evolved. Isn't that an amazing story?
Well, actually, it's very interesting. It's interesting. Nothing in my research of 30 years has been involved with reptilians, but there has been, you know, the putting together of demons and ETs. You know, I've had to talk to Monsignor Balducci about that because, you know, I was involved with him, and
Right.
he said, look, there are demons, there are other dimensions, there is evil, there is that, but they are not ETs. They are basically other dimensional beings. That are trying to interfere, but that doesn't mean they come from some planet. They have to come here and do that. So I listened to him long and hard because he was a demonologist. So of all people, when he spoke to me, he said, no, he said, And you know the Vatican in 2009 came out with the ETs are our brothers and sisters. You know that.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, you've talked about that on our program. About
They're not talking about the extraterrestrial biological entity, the little clone that Corso calls the clone. And we can't build a whole entire study of ufology around a clone. I've been doing a lot of work in Latin America, a lot of work. And my conference in Laughlin, I'm bringing up the Latin American contactees who are insisting that human-type people are coming off ships and talking to them. And have, you know, witnesses, whole groups of people that go out in the desert and meet with these people coming off the ships. What we used to call in the 50s the Space Brother Movement. So we need to look at all of it, all of it, all entire. And this is why I encourage people to read everybody's books. Read everybody's books. Look at all, a whole entire field. And thank you so much, George, for bringing it all together. And I really admire what you say. That it's your job, just like it's mine, just to present the story, to present it, present the evidence.
That's what I try to do every night, Paula. I mean, it's just so important.
Yeah.
What do you think was the most important artifact that Philip Corso was able to retrieve or use? Anything specific?
Well, you know, fiber optics. He talked about having fiber optics, but there was one thing. It's in my book because this doctor from Durango, Colorado, wrote to Colonel Corso about an instrument that he had in his file there. It was a pen-like instrument that at first Colonel Corso thought it was made with batteries and it wouldn't come on until he took it to Fort Belvoir, Maryland, and put long low waves on it. When he did that, the laser came on, and he talked to the doctor about it. He said he had two of them, and one of them, he said, could cut and suture, which means it was it could have been used for medical purposes. And he talked to the doctor about Russia having one like that.
Sounds like
and the American doctor.
The doctor. Yeah. Sounds like Dr. Bones in Star Trek, doesn't it?
Yeah, and can you imagine an instrument that cuts, no blood, and sutures? And, of course, the next question you're going to ask is, if this instrument cuts and sutures and it's bloodless, does it have anything to do with the cattle mutilation? and he thought that's a possibility, you know, and he was very intrigued by that instrument. The doctor wanted it, of course. So a lot of these advanced type instruments. Now the transistor was already there, and a lot of things were already in the mainstream. But I think, you know, what's most fascinating for me, it's in the book. The Colonel talked about the autopsy of the being having four lobes in the brain. I'm sorry, and two implants, one in each lobe, the top lobe, and then he said the being had one lung, a heart, a different lymphatic system, four fingers, I'm sorry, and he went on down comparing the human to the being, the clone. He called them a clone. All
right, stay with us, Paula. We'll talk more and take calls next on Coast to Coast AM.